I cannot lust safely. I'm a sexaholic. I'm a lustaholic. And I'm glad to be here. And hi, family. I have a sober date. I'm from Daytona Beach, Florida. And I have a sober date in spite of living in Daytona Beach, Florida. That's August 17th, 1986, about 11:30 at night. And my principal forms of acting out are, just to sum it up, are my years of living the way I wanted to live. It finally gotten me to the point where I wanted to commit suicide. And with 20 years of being sober and active in AA and rampant in this addiction, were masturbation, pornography, fantasy, same-sex sex, adultery, bestiality, and that's almost the top 10. And hatefulness, that was a form of my acting out, resentment, anger, fear, self-pity. I have a male sponsor, and his name is Mike H., and I call him. And here are my thoughts on sponsorship. I did some reading. Here's my thoughts on the history of sponsorship. I like to think in terms of directed sponsorship, proactive sponsorship, assertive sponsorship, maybe aggressive sponsorship, dynamic sponsorship. It's very interesting to me that the way the 12 step programs got started was not that Roland, from the Oxford group, didn't look through the yellow pages and call and ask somebody to come out to him. Roland, an alcoholic back in 33 or something, went to Dr. Jung in Switzerland and learned something about addiction, and thought he was going to be sober forever and ever. And he came back and he sought out a man named Ebby that he had known. Ebby did not call intergroup. There was no intergroup. He didn't call AA. There was no AA. And to me, it's significant that Roland had a message that he felt would keep him free from addiction and other people. He sought out Ebby. Ebby sought out a guy by the name of Bill W. It's just powerful. Bill W. sought out a guy named Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob and Bill sought out a guy named Bill D. They hunted the poor guy down in a hospital, or I've forgotten, dragged him in or whatever. So that's the way this thing got started. You know, not somebody calling and, would you please come out to my house. These guys went out and knew that they had to find. To me, this is very, very significant. Found a lot of good information about sponsorship by looking through the literature. How much more time do I have? Okay. My experience, it was interesting to me that I found an index of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the word sponsor is not in it. So maybe the word sponsor is not in the Big Book anyhow. It is mentioned in the 12 and 12 with regard of doing the fifth step, but I don't find it in there. I don't claim to be an authority on this, but I don't find it in there on earlier than that. Some of the important, I'm going to share my experience, strength, hope, and opinions on this. First thing is, I am as sick as my secrets. I also believe that I'm as sick as your secrets. And that's why I covet your open introductions, which I learned in Rochester, and not the prisoner of war introductions, which are at some meetings, just rent name, rank, and serial number, you know. I mean, when I walk into a room of people and see, like you folks, you know, you all look like the board of directors of some church or synagogue or cathedral or something, and I'm comparing my insides with your outsides. So it's crucial to me when you tell me that you used to do some of the stuff that I did. I really like it when you did something worse than I did. I can't think what that would be. But try. And so I'm as sick as my secrets, and I believe I'm as sick as your secrets. But you have the right to keep them or tell me. I also need to lead with my weakness, and I pray that you lead with your weakness. These are my needs. And so part of my background is that I haven't had a drink in AA for over 30 years. 20 years when I crawled into this fellowship, thinking about committing suicide. I was limping along with some kind of sponsorship effort. You know, I thought if somebody after a meeting, if I said something at a 12-step meeting, and it was probably, if it was something clever, it was probably something I heard you say the night before, but if I said something that sounded clever, somebody would come up and say, "Will you be my sponsor?" And I'd say, "Yeah, give him my phone number," and that was the end of it. You know, I never heard from him at all. But in this fellowship, what happened to me, I was dry, sexually sober for several years in another fellowship, and then thank God found this fellowship, which to me is the Rolls Royce of S fellowships. And I was dry in this fellowship for a couple of years, just limping along in a group where nobody else was even staying sober and discouraged. And I don't know what I would have done. I was thinking about dropping out of SSA. And I had a dynamic experience. I met a guy named Mike H. And Mike H. took one look at me, and he became very directive. And so I believe he saved my life and my sanity. So what I know about sponsorship is what I learned from him. I believe it's important and that happened in Rochester in January of 1994. Some wonderful information about sponsorship is in this book. There's an AA folder, which is Conference Approved Literature on Sponsorship. There's a lot of good stuff in it, you know, maybe $40 at your AA intergroup. The other 12-step programs have stuff in it. One thing, what is a sponsor? A sponsor might be, the last thing I think a sponsor is a friend. You know, later on, it can be friendship. But I had lots of friends, you know, bartenders, barflies, and whatever, you know, lots of friends. Friends weren't a problem. Friends, you know, quote. But the sponsor was somebody who cared enough to tell me that I was dying and how I was dying and, more important, what to do about it. My sponsor got me into action right away. If you want to follow this up, get the December 93 SA newsletter about successful SA meetings. It's available, and it talks about sponsorship and healthy SA meetings and so forth, and how to get them. Okay, another thing is this yellow paper that's been around. Good stuff in here. In Daytona Beach, we put something into the preamble, into the meeting format, you know, about the importance of sponsorship, and we offer to get you a sponsor before you leave the room. Something very important that's not talked about in gentle ways, the white book and the AA folder, they gently say, you know, it's better for men to sponsor men and women to sponsor women. I've got some real strong opinions on that. And I've seen men sponsor women. And I don't know if you know what 13-stepping is, but that's where somebody in a program hits on a new person coming in. And so one of the strongest feelings I have is that men need to sponsor women. Men need to sponsor women. I told you I was still sick. But I've seen it happen. I've seen men sponsor women. And this disease, in my opinion, lust addiction, sex addiction, makes alcoholism, drug addiction look like a tea party. And if there's any place where men should, you know, same-sex sponsorship rather than cross-sexual sponsorship, you know, boys sponsoring girls. And, you know, and I've seen it being used as an excuse, well, this lady is gay, so it's all right to sponsor, or I'm married, I can sponsor her, or there are two or three of us going to sponsor her. All these things. I never met anybody in this fellowship that didn't have some gender identification orientation confusion. You know, maybe you know somebody. I haven't, sure. I was molested as a kid, and most people I know were in one way or another. So, okay. So, it's sponsorship is partly role modeling and learning how to be a person, and that's all I know.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Bert. Good morning. My name is Mike. I'm a sexaholic. And I'm glad that at least some of you got up early to come and hear us today. And I'm glad it wasn't quite as many as that were here last night. That was frightening. But I need to tell you that I am nervous about standing up in front of you. Our meetings in Rochester are, about this size, 20, 25. It's something different speaking at a convention, so bear with me. As I said, I'm Mike. I'm a sexaholic. And I am. What we do in Rochester is we go around the circle and we each give our litany of the ways that we acted out. And we do this not to stay in the problem or to produce any kind of shame, but to allow other people a chance to identify. And as Bert said, to bring the secrets out. I'm powerless over lust in many forms, lust for men and women. And the desire to be lusted after, masturbation, use of pornography, cruising, sex with strangers, including hitchhikers and prostitutes, voyeurism, exhibitionism, dependent and codependent relationships, idolatry and covetousness, and my character defects. Today, it's a lot of self-centered fear and the need to be impressive. So I want to surrender all that. In spite of all these defects, by the grace of a loving God and the fellowship of this program, I haven't had to act out sexually since October 22nd, 1989, and for this I'm eternally grateful. I just found out that I was going to speak on this panel last night. My sponsor was assigned to two, and he assigned one to me. Only I was supposed to do a different one, and then he said, "No, I changed my mind on that." So, I didn't have a chance to over prepare. I didn't have a chance to. Well, I did obsess some, but all I can give you is my experience, strength, and hope. I don't claim to be any kind of expert on sponsorship. Some of the people I've tried to sponsor got better and stayed in the program, and most of them did not. So, but I take comfort in the fact that Bert was referring to the early days of AA. There was a time when Bill Wilson, after 6 months of working frantically with other drunks, this was before he met Dr. Bob, I think, came back to Dr. Silkworth and says, "It doesn't work. I haven't gotten anybody sober." And Dr. Silkworth told him, "You stayed sober." So I need to remember that sponsorship, as much as I want to help another drunk, it's important for my sobriety. And unlike Bert, when I came to this program, I didn't have a lot of friends. I had pretty much isolated myself from everybody. I decided that since I had lust for other men, that this was something that I had to separate myself from women. This is certainly something I didn't want them to know. And I didn't want other men to know either, so I separated myself from them. So if you separate yourself from men and women, there's not much left to relate to. But today I have a program of action that helps me, and we were just reading the problem and the solution earlier in the meditation thing, and a couple things stood out for me. in the end of the problem, it says, first addicts, then love cripples. We took from others to fill up what was lacking in ourselves. And that had a lot to do with my acting out. I felt inadequate as a person, less than a man, and that was part of what drove me to act out with other men. I wanted to in some way kind of steal their masculinity. So I took from others to fill up what I thought was lacking in myself. In the solution, though, what we read was we began practicing a positive sobriety, taking the actions of love to improve our relations with others. We were learning how to give, and the measure we gave was the measure we got back. So for me, sponsorship has been very important in teaching me how to give to other people. There have been times in sponsoring others where there's that temptation to lust, I have to pray and talk about that with my sponsor. What works for me is that I pray for the people that I sponsor, and when I'm praying for his sobriety and for his union with his higher power and for his spiritual progress, then I can't very well lust for him. So that's what works for me. I had a spiritual director one time that said that he felt his greatest the greatest thing he needed to do for the people that he helped was to pray for them. So that's very important for me. A little bit of my own history in sponsorship. Like Bert, I also have a sponsor, and sponsorship for me goes both ways. I learned how to be a sponsor from the people who sponsored me. My first sponsor in the program was a guy named Michael M. He moved away from Rochester and I guess lives in Portland, Oregon now. But he helped me a lot. And I remember at first I was afraid to bother him, and every time he'd see me, he would say, "Oh, thanks for that call last week. You need to call more." And so I'd call twice a week, and then he'd repeat the same thing until eventually I was calling him every day. And I needed to, in my first year of sobriety, do that and get out all the stuff that was going on in me. I had a crisis a day, and I had no idea how to resolve it. My sponsor brought me back to the Serenity Prayer. He prayed with me on the phone and talked a little bit about his own experience. And when I hung up, I was more at peace. And there was some opportunity for the grace of God to come in and lead me to a solution, or even just drop the whole thing. My current sponsor, one of his favorite lines is when I get through with my recital of moaning, he goes, "Mike, give it up." So that's what I have to do today, is give it up. I worked the steps up with my first sponsor, and then when I had to start with a new sponsor, I worked him again. So I had the benefit of doing that twice in two kind of different ways, and that was very helpful. The second time I used, for my fifth step, I used the forms modeled after the columns in the book. And that was great for me, and that's what I pass on to the people that I sponsored too. First person, I remember when I was about a year sober, I was moaning to my sponsor that nobody wanted me to sponsor them, and he said that you have to be ready, and that God would arrange that. And so I had to let go of that, and finally somebody did ask me to sponsor him. And he wasn't at all the kind of person I had in mind for a sponsee. He was out of a job. He was funny looking, and many other things. But I took him on, and I spent a lot of time with him, and I made a lot of mistakes, and I stayed sober. He moved out of town, so did my next two people I tried to sponsor. And so that was frustrating for a while. And now there are a few people that I'm trying to help in Rochester. I always need to remember that I can't control somebody. When you ask me to sponsor you, I want to come in and take control of your life and tell you everything you're doing wrong. And that's not how it works. All I can do is be a guide to the steps and listen. I think the place for unloading or dumping is not in the meeting, but with your sponsor. I've heard it said in AA that if you don't take credit for getting them sober, then you don't have to take the blame when they get drunk. I have to remember that in sponsorship. About a year and a half ago, a guy who I had sponsored who was a year and a half sober decided he had other ideas and left the program. I really felt devastated, just as I did when my first sponsor left town. And what I've learned from those experiences is I can't tie my own sobriety to some other person. It has to be principles before personalities. And when this guy that I sponsored left the program, I had to call my sponsor several times a week and say, tell me again why I shouldn't call him. And he told me that I was taking away from him the opportunity to call me. So it's time for me to shut up, and thanks for listening.
Shortest member. My name is Paul. I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic from Baltimore.
Hi.
It's only through God's grace in this program I've been sober since July 19th, 1989. And my forms of acting out were masturbation, use of pornography, and relationships outside of my marriage. It was enough to kill me. Got me to this program. I don't know why I'm up here, because I think I had a phone call a couple of weeks that said, would I want to be on a panel? It had something to do with sponsorship. That's the last direction I heard. So I showed up, and here I am. I think really the real reason is a conspiracy between the people I sponsor who want to hear me talk at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, because what they know is that I'm usually sleeping at this time. And one of the things that sponsorship and sponsoring others I've had to learn is that I've had to be able to set healthy limits for me and with another person. It was easy getting in the program. When I was the desperate one, I had to find and have people direct me. It was another problem to have to be able to set limits on other people, and a newcomer particularly. One of my sponsees said, I'm harder to get a hold of than Bill W. So I said, well, call him. And if you reach him, connect with me afterwards and let me know about how you did that. I think that I can only share my experience, strength, and hope. I don't know a lot of things about a lot of things, but what I do know is that I couldn't direct myself anywhere before I got here. And in fact, two of my sponsors that I've had came to me, called me. I still understand it. It's still mysterious to me. The first one was in my first meeting. I was told to go to an AA meeting because the person I came to in desperation, not know what happened to myself, but I heard the idea that it might be an addiction, and he's the only one I knew that was addicted and doing well. This wasn't his addiction. He told me to go to an AA meeting, and he said to, when they ask for newcomers, just say that your name is Paul and that you're not an alcoholic, but you have another addiction, and you'd like to talk to someone after the meeting who might know something about other addictions. And I was hoping that I would just hide there. You know, there's a lot of people having fun with each other, and I just wanted to sneak in there, sit in the chair. And then I figured, well, the newcomers, they would just ask about last, you know, because that's where I was. I was last. I was on the bottom of the pile. And they do it first. And I had that moment of truth, you know, when you could say, well, maybe I'll do it the next meeting I go to. But there was no next meeting for me. There was nothing. The only thing I got was when I'm like on the plank with someone with a sword in my back, and it's like I suddenly get the idea maybe I should jump. You know, and it's not my idea. So this person, and I was just a mess, person came up to me after the meeting, made a beeline for me, which was kind of unusual, and he said that I'm so-and-so, I'm an alcoholic and a sex addict. Now, in 1989, Our fellowship was very small in Baltimore, and to go to just a random AA meeting, have someone do that. I know today that was because I had no tomorrow after that meeting. I literally knew not where to go after that meeting. I was getting thrown out of the house. I was losing my job from acting out. All the money I spent was on this acting out. I was morally, spiritually dead. And I was contemplating suicide. Now, I know today that I had to go to that suicide brink so that I knew what to share with someone who else was suicidal when I was sponsee. I mean, I literally have, as a sponsor, have had people call me and said, you know, one of these people, your sponsor, he's tying himself to a tree out in the middle of the woods and he wants to die. No, I looked up in the SA sponsor manual, page 52, and it had what I should do. There is no sponsor manual. I looked for one. I don't know what to do in a situation like that, except I knew to say I don't know the answer, and I had to pray to God to hopefully to give me something to go on. My sponsees have told me a lot of things about sponsorship, taught me a lot. One of it is that I can't get in the way. You know, I just have to surrender it. I don't know anything myself. I can't direct anybody else better than I directed me, and I directed me only to hear. That's it. I've had a lot of strange experiences. Sponsorship for me was that I knew I had a problem. I knew I didn't have the answer, that someone else, some other power outside of me, had to steer me to sanity, and I wasn't going to be able to have a relationship with God until I had a relationship with one of you all. If I didn't have a relationship with one of you all, there's no way I could connect with God if I can't see. I tried that. I mean, I had a relationship with God, I thought, and all it was my father. When I finally, you know, got to picture who that was, it was my father. It wasn't God at all. It wasn't a higher power that could restore me to sanity. It was a higher power that could drive me insane. Okay? And so I had to find a human being who I could surrender to and practice the step of surrender. I didn't always like what I was told to do. In fact, one of those things was to call at 6:45 in the morning every day. I don't even like getting up that early. I usually get in early to work, but that was even early for me just to talk to him, and I didn't have anything to say. I mean, I said, "What am I going to call you 6:45 in the morning?" I don't have anything to say. He says, "Don't worry about it. Just call." So all it did, it taught me just to call, get in the practice, because that phone is mighty heavy. After 3.5 years of that, we decided that maybe I didn't have to do that every day anymore, 6:45 in the morning. The other thing is that my sponsor, I think the only time he ever called me was before he was my sponsor, when he didn't have something to give me to do. Okay? And I learned that I have to call him. And that's the only way he knew that I was interested, and he had sponsored a number of people. And so, I mean, that was his way, I guess, to know that I wanted the program and I wanted something he had. It was the only way. It was simple. It was pretty clear to me today. And so, and it kept him and now keeps me out of the idea that I'm supposed to make you and help you keep sober. Okay? I mean, I couldn't keep me sober. I ain't going to keep you sober. In fact, one person at least recently asked me to sponsor him. It was just a mess. And I couldn't even get to the idea of whether he really was a member of this program or not. And that's his decision, not mine. And I said, you know, if you don't decide on whether you're a member of this program, how are you going to keep me sober? How are you going to help keep me sober? And he looks up and said, what? You know, he thought I was nuts. So but that helped him a day or so, you know, that just the fact that, you know, it helped him think differently, and I, you know, it wasn't me. So I had someone I sponsored call me in the middle of Amish territory in a bed and breakfast. He says, I'm in the middle of Amish territory. I'm at a bed and breakfast with my wife, and I'm lusting. And all I could say was, man, you're in trouble. you're in big trouble. You qualify for this program and you're in trouble. I mean, and the strange thing is that helped him. You know, helped him. I still don't know how. It's just helped him, okay? Because I know I've been desperate in the middle of what should be safe territory, and I wasn't. I was outside of a meeting, our Wednesday meeting. I was in the parking lot in my car, maybe 20 yards from a meeting, and I was calling my sponsor on the phone because I could not get myself into the meeting, okay? And I felt stupid. I felt absolutely shameful and stupid, but I was there stuck, and I swear, I had this phone in my car. I did enough phone calls during my acting out, I could tell you that. So can I call my sponsor on this phone 20 paces from a meeting and be okay? I said, damn, I better. So I call, and I spent half the meeting time in my car talking to my sponsor on the phone. And so, you know, that was an experience I needed to have so I can help other people by sharing my experience, because I can't get into book stuff and that gets into my head. So those are some of my experiences. I don't know what my bat. I guess if this was baseball, I have a good batting average. Okay, I warn people before they ask me and accept me as a sponsor that about half of the people that ask me to be their sponsor, I don't see ever again. You know, and the other half, they're still around. Okay, I had a sponsee tell me that the people that I sponsored seemed to be around the longest, and that's how that was all good enough for him. But I had to warn him that half I never see again. I had one sponsee fire me after their first step that I asked them to do, you know, and it was the best thing. They're still around, okay? But they fired me. So I don't really know what the sponsorship is, except that it has forced me to surrender my will and my life to another human being who I had to think and believe that God talked through. Okay? And that helps me be available to others. And that's the beginning of my program. And today I may call my sponsor a lot less than I did, certainly, and a lot better time for me. But it's still the same. I call him. Okay? And so maybe if that helps you, that's fine. If not, well, then it might be someone else who you can listen to. So I'll keep quiet and I'll sit down for a while. Thanks. Keep quiet.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay, we got time for questions. So ask the question, and I'll say it again so that it'll be on the tape so people who listen will know. Okay, that gentleman there. Yeah.
My name is Hank. I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic. I'm from the Chicago area. I had an experience with my sponsee. He called me at 8 o'clock on Sunday morning and told me that he was in jail and wanted me to come and bail him out. And my immediate reaction was, yes, I will go and I will come and bail you out. So he said, fine, hung up, told me where he was. It was about 60 miles out of town. And then I started thinking, should I do this or shouldn't I do it? I called several people in the program who'd been in the program a long time, and they said, do what your gut feel tells you to do, and this is what I would do for anyone in this room. I immediately became very nervous and started reliving my experience when I was arrested and picked up by the police and taken to a police department. I went and I bailed him out, and that worked out fine. But on the way back, we stopped for a cup of coffee, and I told him exactly how I felt, that it had made me relive an experience that I had that was the most terrible experience of anything that had ever happened to me in my life. And I think God did this for me so that it would bring back to me with such force, such powerful force, what happened to me. So I think that anything you do as a sponsor is good for you, because I know it did something for me, kept me sober. Thanks.
Hey, Charlie.
My name is Charlie. I'm
alcoholic, and I just want to ask, Paul, you said it's a question-answer period? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, what do you mean by submitting and surrendering to the sponsor? What does that mean?
Well, I'm still Paul, a grateful recovering sexaholic. Well, it's different today than it was initially when I first came in the program. I just had to surrender my will. I mean, my will was killing me. So I heard this about this word surrender. It said in the third step. And see, then I was so full of grandiosity that I thought that by the third step I would have completed it. It means surrender. That's you complete it there. And then my sponsor pointed out that says the decision. You just have to decide to. I mean, which is a whole lot different task. And that was the first way that I could surrender. When he said say the serenity prayer 39 times on my knees, I did it. I mean, and it helped me out. I mean, I don't know how he got that idea or whatever, but it was just a way of practicing not doing my will. And if I'm not doing my will, then I'm surrendering. And so that's at the beginning. Today it means something different, that I have to be able to rely on some internal markers that I've learned how to do after doing 5, 4, 5, 6, and 7. And then now I call him and we have a little bit more different relationship. And so we might be doing other things, or I might be surrendering some character defects as it shows up in our relationship. So it gives me one clear opportunity to surrender in my life, a pathway. I have many other ones today. That's not the only one, but that's where it started. And then I learned how to surrender myself, in the context of other people sponsoring. Like the person just spoke, it shows me that everybody's path is different. I mean, so I have someone call me and say they wanted me to pay their rent for them. Because they're going to get thrown out on the street, and that's their best interest. And I know I catastrophize, and I say, is this in a step somewhere? I don't know where it is. And so I said, no, that's not my role. I said, if it has to do with the 12 steps, and we have it, that's fine. So that was another surrender for me, because I would do that. I would, had the means to do that, and it wouldn't be even noticed by anyone particularly, but I would know it, and God would know it. And so I had to surrender that caretaking kind of behavior, because it's in my story that I have to be able to stop that, because it's killing me and gets me set up for lust.
Mike, could I speak to that just for a second? I recognized with great clarity when a sponsee of mine had a birthday that it wasn't because of my brilliant suggestions that he was staying sober, but because he was willing to take them. And so today, the way, as Paul said, the way I can break up this huge ego and start to surrender is by letting my sponsor be right. Even though I know he's wrong, I do what he says anyway, just so I can say, I told you so, and it always works out. So, thanks.
I'm Jay, a sexaholic, and I'd like all three of you individually to answer this, if you can. Would you fire a sponsee, and under what circumstances would you fire a sponsee?
Yeah, the question is to the all three people on the panel, would you fire a sponsee? And is that it? Would you under what circumstances? Yeah. Well, I'm Bert. I'm sexaholic, and the answer to that is yes. I have fired people, and try to do it gently. Yeah, there's a man here in the audience who knows, and under what circumstances? When the firing would be for his best interest and or my best interest, and to do it gently, lovingly, caringly, and specifically talking about the whole blessed thing, why. And I'm so human, and that I try to make no bones about it, about you know, sometimes I just can't talk. More specifically, if they're not following my suggestions, if I make suggestions and they feel it's wrong, tell me where it's wrong. And maybe I'm wrong. I made a mistake once last year. It was a time I thought I was wrong, you know. But what one of my sponsees did to me recently, or did for me, he set up a performance review, and of me and of he, you know, and that's great. And you know, they do it for the international globular companies, and you know, and all that stuff. I think it's a wonderful idea. If a sponsorship is not good for both of us, it's not good for either one of us. So I have some specific things. I ask people to go to as many meetings as possible, make sure it's a temporary interim sponsorship, which gives him the, and I only sponsor men, I'm not into 13-stepping, you know, that way he can fire me on a minute's notice, and I can fire him on a minute's notice. If it's a married man, I suggest very strongly that he get into total family recovery, and do the best he can to urge his wife to get into recovery too. I happen to think that healthy people do not marry sick people. And you can take that anywhere you want. So I ask them to encourage their wives to get involved in S&N, and if not, then they got to, you know, work a solo program. But it's also for the kids, you know, because kids are going to marry daddies and mommies, you know, and all that kind of thing. And also, one thing is I refuse to sponsor anybody who's going to use drugs, you know, and a lot of people I know, you know, they say they're not alcoholics, and then you hear a little bit of the history, and I know better. But everybody's got to find out for himself. But in my experience, it's hard enough with 100% of my faculties to stay sober and try to keep in touch with God. And if I give away 1% of that to one beer, two beers, or one joint, or a needle, or whatever, I'm just not going to sponsor anybody. And I won't sponsor anybody who doesn't want their wife to be in recovery. You know, she may not come in, but if he doesn't want her to be in, find somebody else. You know, it's a matter of life and death. You know, we're on the Titanic, and there's a big white thing ahead. You know, thanks.
Thanks, Bert. I'm Mike, sexaholic. Would I fire a sponsee? Yes, I have. And under what circumstances? Well, first I want to say, once again, I've been on both ends of that. Because my first sponsor, when he was getting ready to leave the program and go off to Oregon, called me and said, I can't sponsor you anymore. Or actually, I think I called him, and in the middle of my daily recitation, he said, wait, I can't sponsor you anymore. And I didn't know that I could ask for an explanation, and I was just dumbfounded, and of course I thought it was my fault. That was very hard for me, and I vowed that I would never do that to somebody. So when I, if I need to fire somebody, or what I prefer to say, to sever our sponsorship relationship, I want to do it in person, and explain something about it. Usually, in a lot of cases, it's kind of a moot point. It's somebody who hasn't been going to meetings, who hasn't been calling me, and I need to make a break there. I need to, what's that called, where you tie up the loose ends. I need to say, you know, closure, thank you. And I need to get, that's the point where I call the person and say, can we meet? And I have something to tell you, and I say, I can't sponsor you anymore. You're not in the program as far as I'm concerned. There also was a guy that I was trying to help who had been to several sponsors before, and he couldn't stay sober, and I was willing to take him on. He was following my suggestions. He was calling me, But he wasn't getting a breakthrough, and I didn't know how else to help him, and I told him that. And I said, as Bert said, if it's in the guy's best interest, I said, I think it's better for you to start again with somebody else. Thanks.
My name is Paul, Grateful Recovering Sexaholic. I've been fired by a sponsee, and I've fired a sponsor, but I don't think I've ever had the experience of firing a sponsee. And that's just been my experience. What I have had to do is I've sponsored very toxic individuals. I've also thought about firing sponsees. I've even, obsessed over firing sponsees. But what I found that most of that had to do with some character defect I was struggling with. As people were talking, it helped me understand that when we're talking about surrendering to a sponsor, as a sponsor, what I find that I had to learn how to repair relationships. Because once I got to 7, I had 8 and 9 waiting for me. And I certainly couldn't repair relationships in my marriage and my kids until I had a relationship that I was stuck with, not by my choice particularly, and had to work out how to repair that. So as a sponsor to sponsees, I found that, that was a challenge. But what I've gotten out of that, the fruits of that, have been that it's helped me in my other relationships in my life. My wife, I guess, could have fired me. I guess she was doing that when I got in the program. But, now I have relationships with people outside the program, too. And one thing has been clear is that each of those relationships have been modeled and using the principles of this program that I have learned in sponsor-sponsee relationships, too. What I usually do is learn how to say, are you a member of the program? Okay. Because that's only your decision. If we can't get past that, then I have nothing to talk about. You see, and what I think about is these limbs on trees, natural pruning, I can give it water, but it's still these die out and fall off. I mean, I don't have to cut them off. There's a natural process to this, and I found that most of the people who've left me being their sponsor either fired me because of clear reasons that they had at the time, and they've stayed or not stayed, and others who just sort of dwindled because they had nothing to talk to me about. As long as I was able to say, are you a member? Yeah, I'm a member, and they qualify. And then I say, okay, paying the rent to me doesn't have anything to do with the 12 steps. Talk to me about what step are we talking about here, And so that usually is a natural pruning process. If they don't want to hear that, the program, then, And that's been a challenge for me because I'd rather talk about this other stuff because, this is harder. So I have not fired anybody, but not that I haven't wanted to.
Nathaniel Sexaholic from Boston Sober, a little over 3 years. Hi. I sponsor a couple guys, and one of them I'm very close with. I really, really like him. We're friends. And I guess I just wanted to ask about if you have that experience, or I'm afraid that if I'm really close to someone, I won't be able to make the confrontation I need to, so I guess I just wanted to open that up to conversation, and anyone can take it if they want.
Yeah, thank you. I'm Bert. I'm a sexaholic. And, I have to keep the relationships clear. I've learned a lot from my sponsees. Just make sure what the relationship is. But at a time, if something comes up, I need to take off my friend hat and put on my sponsor hat and say, by the way, it's good to talk about this, but you're bleeding to death, so it's a matter of sponsor, and it's a matter of keeping the relationships clear, I went to work for a sponsor I had one time, and right after that, it just didn't work out, so I got to know which hat, I've been working in the addictions field for a lot of years, and I got to be sure which hat I got on. And if I'm a sponsor and I'm putting on my counselor hat, you better leave town. And I've been hired and rehired and refired and stuff. And I guess one of the biggest things I've learned is, and I never knew it when I was raising three kids. You know, I had to treat kids as a unit. You know, I couldn't say that each one's different. Is I've learned to try to see each sponsor separately and ask for feedback. And I'm currently not married. It's been a while. I don't remember how long. But so when I'm sponsoring somebody who is married, and when it comes to talking about abstinence, you know, they're going to say, well, I'm just jealous or something like that. So I just, you know, ask them to talk to somebody else. And if it's somebody I think ought to be taking their kids to church or Sunday school, talk to somebody that does. The main thing I need to remember is my limitations. And
thanks, Bert. I'm Mike Sexaholic. This is a real good question for me. Thanks, Nathaniel. Sponsorship and friendship. It's good for me because when I was new and I wanted to be a sponsor, it was because I wanted somebody to be my friend. I lusted after friendship in this program. And I like what Bert said. I need to keep the relationship clear. When somebody calls me with a problem, this call is about him. It's not about me. He may say, how are you doing? And I may say a little bit, but I'm not going to talk to him the way I talk to my sponsor. That's what my sponsor is for. So I need to keep I tell my sponsors, you need to keep the focus on you, and I want to help them with that. I was very disappointed early in my sponsorship career, so to speak, that the people I sponsored didn't become my best friends, and they didn't invite me over for cookouts and things. And I'm a single guy, and I that's what I wanted to happen. Today, it's a little bit different. There's at least one guy that I sponsored for a while, and we have more of a give and take relationship. But that's okay. So I agree with Bert that I think it depends on the individual. When somebody's new in sobriety, and it's just a matter of putting the next hour or the next day together, excuse me, then there's not a lot of room for sponsorship or for friendship. I have, however, offered fellowship to new people that I sponsored that were like I was, very cut off from the human race. And I remember my first sponsor took me to a ball game, and I was thrilled. You know, so I have invited them. You know, invited them over when we're doing step work to have a meal, things like that. So I offer fellowship. So that's all I have.
Paul, sexaholic. It's interesting because I just thought of a circumstance where I would fire a sponsee. Keeping the different hats separately, I work in a profession that I have had the strangest experience of running into people in meetings and or there and vice versa. And right now in my life, I'm having that experience again. If I were their therapist or whatever, and they were in the program, I could not be their sponsor. So I guess that would be a preemptive firing. or if that happened, if they showed up, and that would, I couldn't have both relationships with them. And that's challenging me in my recovery today. So the boundaries are real important with that. Most of the friends I have are fellows in recovery. I mean, I didn't know what a friendship was. I didn't have any relationships before this program. And so today, maybe 60 or 70% of my friends or people in my life are in fellowship. I have some that aren't. It's not because I reduced them. It's because I have more people. And they've, you know, and none of they don't have to be in recovery. Well, if you want to see the strangest thing, is I had a ceremony and a party at my house, and I had a third fellows, a third neighbors and friends, and a third my family members. And of course, in my head, I had them divided. The fellows would be on this side, you know, the yard, and they were all intermingled, you know. And it went fine. It went well. One of my sponsees is a godfather to my youngest child. We only had him through this program of recovery. We never would have had him. And so sometimes that's how it is. I mean, but what Bert says is I agree with my experience, is that push comes to shove, the program comes first, and my relationships in the program come first. And that means, you know, my wife can't be my sponsor even though she wants to apply for the position. She'll probably listen to this tape. Sorry, but it's the truth. And so that's it. I mean, maybe
I should yeah. Are we out of time? Or pardon? Okay. Any burning? Do we have time for a burning desire? Any smoldering, burning desires? Okay. We've done it all. You guys and us. That's it.